Thank you for listening to Internet Boyfriends.
She's jealous, isn't she?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't push to the point of insanity. I don't think I'm ever going to prolapse.
We are really bad on staying on top. I fucking apologize to any listeners that think that we're organized in any fucking way.
The Nazis are back, and they're flying over, about to bomb fucking Toronto, duck and cover.
Krampus! Like,
yeah, like, I wish I had a better way of describing that so I didn't sound like a fucking racist. Like,
it's terrible!
As long as I get a laugh and you get a laugh, I think we've been successful, so.
That was my grandmother, you son of a bitch! She didn't splatter like a bag of meat!
I'm telling you what I learned from television and Wikipedia.
She really likes how I say audio.
I know how the internet works.
Internet Boyfriends. Hey, and welcome to another episode of Internet Boyfriends. I am Joey, and with me is always the CSS3 to my HTML5. Nothing false.
Boom!
Oh, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. I figured I'm the one that's, like, full of hot air,
and you're the one that's actually useful, so that's maybe... Or then you'd be the JavaScript to my HTML5.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway.
Anyways, this week on Internet Boyfriends, or this whatever episode of Internet Boyfriends, we're going to be talking about the part two-ish to the previous episode, which we did, which was talking about more or less people not being able to create whatever. I'll get into it in a second.
Well, we are people that have moods. Sometimes we're angry at the world, sometimes we're not. And we can learn things and grow from them. That's all. Like, we're not supposed to have... This whole thing that you're supposed to have a fixed view of the world and can't change your mind at any point is fucking bullshit. So
yeah. It is.
We have calmed down, or maybe we've calmed down. Let's find out. That's what this whole conversation is supposed to be about.
Yeah. Well, originally,
moved to other things, or other variations of the thing. But
my anger has dissipated. Actually, that's what I wanted to talk about. Is I was very angry about all of this. You know, how dare people dilute what is actually out there with new shit that they're just crapping out of their buttholes on, you know, onto the internet or things like that. Essentially because I really didn't understand something that we're going to get into a lot of detail about in a little bit of time. But to sort of move back from what I was saying before, changing my mind, changing everything I had said, I do think that everyone can create something. I do think that everyone more or less does leave an imprint on the world in some way. And I think that when it comes to art, in the sense of we're talking about stuff that is if you wanted my definition of art, it's just simply shit that we don't need that we do because we want to express ourselves and so we do it. If you're making a collage, if you're painting a painting, if you're writing a book, if you're making a fart symphony, whatever it is that you're doing that you don't have to do, if it's not getting you actual, like, if it's not a direct, like, if you're not slaughtering a cow, you know, in order to make hamburgers, or you're not doing something to breathe and stay alive and get more oxygen or sunlight on you or whatever it is, it's art.
But if you're slaughtering a cow to express yourself,
I wouldn't recommend that.
That's either art or animal cruelty. I'm not sure which.
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. So yeah, again, I'm going to be really, I don't know. Like, I feel very passionate about this now, but I don't feel any animosity towards people in the way that I did. Where if you're making stuff and you're putting things up on YouTube and you're saying, like, hey, look at me, I'm making art. Look, you know, like, aha, you know, whatever. I don't fucking care anymore. Mainly because
the long and the short of what I remember of part two was that we were very, I'm going to speak for me because this is what I remember. I was very upset at people putting out quote-unquote art in order to be famous as opposed to because they had some feeling or thought that they needed to express or could not help themselves and couldn't find any other way to get it out other than art. That was where I was.
Yes, I was with you there. I think by the end of the episode, as we usually do, we came together in that point and said, if you're putting out art simply to be famous, or if you're putting out anything simply to gain fame or attention, you're an asshole.
Basically, I think we're probably still both on that page in a certain amount.
I actually disagree with that.
Okay, asshole's a strong word, but I'm still... As we say on a podcast we're releasing for people to listen to, I still have problems with shameless attention grabbing. But anyway, let's go on. You're you go see what you got to say,
okay.
And I will jump in.
I think that there's nothing much we can say about shameless attention grabbing because that's what's going to fucking happen. That's what the future is. That's what reality is. That's what it is. I think that one of the biggest things that I've sort of felt weird about in recent times is Google Glass, the fucking Google Glasses with a little webcam, that they're a little camera that they're mounting on the side of it, of where it's an overlaid augmented reality onto the corner of your site. So you can
see. It's a heads-up display, basically.
Heads-up display. There you go. So people have been talking a lot about how, oh, man, that's so cool. Like, look what it's going to do. Look at all these things. Yeah, that's all well and good, but the problem I have with it is not the person wearing it, it's the other people around that person. Because what I think people are doing more and more, and I think that you can see – did you see the Live at the Beacon? Well, yeah, of course you did. The fucking Louis C.K.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. At the beginning of that, he says, hey, turn off your fucking cell phone, stop tweeting, live your life, stop trying to you know, repurpose it for other means.
And if you have a complaint, write it on a piece of paper, go home and clear yourself.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, very, very, very light touch from Louis. But yeah, so fucking that's what I feel a lot of people have been doing more and more. They're creating so much. Fucking YouTube gets, like, for what? Fucking every, you know, minute they have 7 days of video updated, uploaded or whatever?
I don't know what it is now, but yeah, it's insane.
It's something insane. People are creating so much that it is physically impossible for any one person to know what to consume or know what to watch or read or anything. So much shit is being made, and as someone who makes these sorts of things, my anger about all this stuff was frustration. It's being frustrated that how am I supposed to stand above everybody with what I do? How is my stuff supposed to be better than everything else? Not because I have low self-esteem, and that's not something new to this fucking podcast. But my self-esteem is not that low that I think that the shit that I do is on par with what a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old is uploading to YouTube from their webcam. The stuff that I make, even this fucking podcast, took me time to sit down and think about this stuff. I've had conversations about this. I've sat and I've talked to you before this podcast about it. I wrote out a little outline. Like, I've done things to prepare and think, and I have ideas that are a little more fully formed than simply, I like Justin Bieber, and I'm going to fucking ramble on about it for 20 minutes on YouTube.
And this is why you're the artist, I'm the asshole talking to the artist.
I don't think so, though. I don't, that's...
Because the long and the short, because I don't have any plans, I have a glass of bourbon in my hand, and I'm just shooting the shit with you. But, we all have, anyway, I'm being a pain in the ass. Go on.
Okay, so what I was trying to say is that, yeah, there's a lot of people just barfing things out on the internet. There's a lot of people just barfing out what they say is art, or they're attention seeking. And the reason they're doing that is not because they're bad people or because I should hate them. Fucking, they're taking attention away from me. And if I was younger, if I was more susceptible to fucking any of these sorts of things, I'd be very angry about that. I was frustrated enough to fucking want to record a podcast with you about it a couple months ago, but now I don't fucking care anymore. And the reason I don't care is a two-prong thing. One, everyone can create. I'm sorry that we said otherwise. I'm sorry that I said otherwise, that everyone
should, not can, should.
No, I think everyone can create.
I'm saying everyone can, and also they should.
Yes. Okay. All right. I see where you're going with
that. Whether they should have professional aspirations of creativity or not is a different story.
Yes. Okay. So that's what I was my sub point for the first half of this is saying that we were talking about this. You and I were talking about this the other day in the context of things like iPads, stuff like that. People are getting more and more pissed off. Generally, like, nerds are getting more and more pissed off because computing is going in the direction of, say, the Chromebook. People motherfucking love the Chromebook, and they fucking should. The Chromebook is awesome. But at the same time, you really can't make anything with the Chromebook. You really can't do a whole lot with the Chromebook. You can't fucking have, you know, a CAD program on the fucking Chromebook. You can't fucking program on the Chromebook unless you fucking flip the little developer switch and fucking dink around with it or whatever you fucking do. Like, there's the fucking, you can't. It's fucking locked. It's what it is. Same thing with an iPad. Even fucking
no, that's not true. The iPad. There's all sorts of drawing apps, writing apps. There's like.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of stuff you can, like, we know Daniel Emmons is writing scripts on the iPad. I know people that do art on the iPad. Alan has done art on the iPad. Jim Lee's done art on the iPad. Like, as bare bones, the iPad is a consumption device.
Yes.
But because there are all sorts of apps that people use, there are all sorts of creative options for it. You can carry it around for you and draw sketches all day on the bus because you have an iPad.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you can also do it if you have a pen and paper, to be fair.
Yes.
But there's nothing I can think of right now that the iPad can do better than another device in terms of creating something, though. That is true.
Yeah, I don't mean to shit on the iPad. I'm just working towards my point that I think that creativity, on average, looks a lot more like tinkering and remixing things than it does actually creating brand new things that fucking most people are not J.K. Rowling. But there are thousands of people out there that are writing Harry Potter fan fiction, and fucking good on them. Yay. Yay for that. Like, I don't want to read it. Don't fucking show it to me. But I'm glad that someone out there is writing continuing adventures of Harry Potter. So.
And again, it goes back to, as long as they're not hoping to be the next Stephanie Meyer. Is it Stephanie Meyer who did 50
Shades
of Grey?
Yeah, it is.
No, she did Twilight.
What's that?
Stephanie Meyer was Twilight. Who did 50 Shades of Grey?
E.L. James?
E.L. James, it was fan fiction that got turned into a bestseller.
Yes, exactly. But that's whatever. I don't...
Maybe he, she, whatever, had a vision that had to be put out in terms of bondage and sex, but as long as now that that's been a success, you're not just doing it to be famous, I'm beating a dead horse. Sorry, go on.
I don't know if that is. I don't know the person. I don't know. I'm assuming because I think it's a she. I really don't know much about it because as soon as all that 50 Shades of Grey stuff happened, I think that's what...
I went and cried in the corner.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff is what spawned all of these feelings inside of me last year. As I started to feel more and more inadequate with my own work and my own success and all those things, I got really upset about this because I said, hey, fucking what I do looks a lot like tinkering and remixing and like fucking even like a blog post, you know, or whatever it is. Like the little shit that I do is just fucking making little shit. You know, it's not writing a book. It's not doing all these sorts of things because I am doing that bigger shit, and that bigger shit takes a really long time to do, and it's really fucking hard to do. And something that I do now that I never did before is I keep all that shit to myself, and I got really frustrated about that because when I was younger, I would constantly say like, "Hey, you know, this new project's coming out, or this thing's happening, like shit's happening," because I expected people to care. But now I don't because I, one, don't expect anyone to care, and two, I don't fucking give a shit if anyone cares. I'm doing what I'm doing regardless of what everyone else in the world wants. And that's a very scary feeling because for me and for a lot of people, creating is not a status thing. It's a self-esteem thing. It's a personal thing of where I'm making this because I'm writing a book because I fucking have to.
That's the best thing in the world.
Yeah, but it's okay. It is the best thing in the world for someone who's making this stuff, or someone who's reading this stuff or consuming this stuff, or you have this romantic artistic ideal, and you're saying that's the best thing in the world. But mentally, internally, for me, it's one of the fucking worst things in the world because through years of therapy, I've finally realized that you can't say that you have to do things or you must do things. I mean, even with something like a job or whatever, I mean, people are like, oh my God, this fucking, you know, job is terrible. It's worse than death. You know, no, it's not. It's just you're being really irrational about it.
Okay, so you're speaking about need in the very literal sense.
I'm speaking about it in the sense of where I feel like if I don't do this, I will die.
Yeah, but that's not a – like if people need to do that, why is – okay, I'm confused here.
Sure.
About the disconnect between me saying it's the best thing in the world and you saying, well, if you think that it's an actual need or you're going to die, how is it not the best thing in the world?
I'm saying it's the best thing in the world for maybe the creative person after the fact. And it's maybe the best thing in the world for the people who read what's created because that person is pouring, you know, blood, sweat, tears, other metaphors into whatever in order to get it done. Oliver Sacks, I don't know if you know where Oliver Sacks is.
I've seen him talk.
Okay, there you go. So you do know who Oliver Sacks is. I feel confident saying Oliver Sacks because I've heard his name.
My girlfriend is a neuroscientist.
Yeah,
was,
I know. So basically, Oliver Sacks wanted to write a book, and he kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And eventually, he said to himself, "If I don't write this book, I'm going to kill myself." And he got the book done because he realized that it was no longer a question of just getting a book done. It was a matter of life or death, because if he didn't get the book done, he would have to kill himself, and that's where he was at. Mm-hmm. Because I think that Oliver Sacks inside is a very weird and crazy person that is somehow functional, because that's generally how human beings work.
That is the impression I got of him from his talk.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy is boring and interesting in equal measure.
Yeah.
A friend of mine fell asleep next to us.
Yeah, that's all Oliver Sacks.
Yeah. It wasn't an Awakenings thing either. It was just like...
That's Oliver Sacks. Fuck. There's some episode of Radiolab where he's on there where he talks about eating kidney beans, and it's one of the most fascinating things I've ever heard, and at the same time, it's a story about kidney beans.
Yeah.
So, yeah, whatever. For some reason, I have been coming into all of these realizations of saying, hey, even today I had a fucking conversation with Sophia. I'm really, really worried about my book. I'm really, really worried about all of these sorts of things, because I'm afraid that other things in life, like the need to pay bills and the need to be a normal person and all the rest of that kind of stuff. I have a very unconventional way of living my life, extremely unconventional way of living my life. And it's very, very tasking internally. To have to sit down in front of a mirror or whatever it is and talk to myself and say, hey, your self-esteem is okay. You're an okay dude. Everything you're doing is okay. You're not hurting anyone. Ultimately, you're trying to reduce suffering and learn more and share more of what you've learned. You're trying to synthesize knowledge and give it to other people. You're trying to teach in a way that allow the universe or whoever in some way to reduce suffering, even the smallest little bit, make people happy. That's something that's got to be good. It's not about status. It's not about getting attention. I ultimately don't care. I think that's the big difference is that when we previously recorded that podcast, I thought it was about getting attention, but it's not. I prefer that I have a small group of people that loves and understands me. Outside of that group, I don't really care. I have a pretty good support system. I'm happy with that, and I'm moving on. Like, I feel better about things. It's kind of even funny with regards to this. If for anybody who's ever writing a novel or anything like that, you tend to write what you know, and you tend to say, hey, the first protagonist I write is going to be essentially me, just in a different way. And if you don't love yourself, if you don't really care about yourself or see all the good qualities that you have, you're going to write a really shitty protagonist. Because for a good 2 years, I tried to write a book about a guy who I thought was me, until I looked at it recently and realized the guy is fucking despicable. Because I put all of my worst habits and all of my worst qualities in a character. I made the character interesting. I'm not going to say I didn't do that. I believe that I'm all right as a, I'm all right when it comes to writing enough that I can make it interesting. But at the same time, nobody wants to fucking read. You wouldn't want to read, you know, fucking Indiana Jones. You wouldn't want to watch Indiana Jones if he raped Marion in the opening of fucking Raiders of the Lost Ark, or you know, like you wouldn't even no matter how bad or like Han Solo, for example. People are like, Han Solo is your famous like, ah, that guy is a scoundrel. Yeah, he's a scoundrel, but he's fucking lovable. That's why you like him. Generally, protagonists or anyone, any main character, even fucking antagonists have to be lovable in some way. And if your self-esteem isn't good enough, if you don't have enough ability to point out what's lovable in yourself, fucking, you're going to have a lot of problems with that. That's a completely different aside, but maybe that's good writing advice. I don't know. Anyways, The second part of all this is I came into realizing that basically there's two economies that we have to deal with all the time now. Years ago, when you created things, you would have to go to, say, a fucking gatekeeper, I guess, if you want to call it that. I guess that's what we do call
sure.
People. Yeah, sure. Fucking people.
Publishers of some sort.
Publishers, yeah. Whoever. Even if it's just the fucking local comic book shop guy and you say, hey, I fucking stapled together my zine. You know, can you put these out on that table over there and sell them? No matter what, you have to convince at least one person that you're good enough in order for them to distribute what you do. Nowadays, you don't have to convince anybody. There's no disclaimer on YouTube that says, hey, if you don't understand, like, what a fucking Dutch angle is, you shouldn't fucking shoot anything and put it up on YouTube. Like, you know, that's not what's there. Like, you can share fucking Tumblr. You can share whatever you want. You can share other people's shit. So, okay, hold on a second. I read it, and I don't really understand entirely what we were arguing about with the John Allison thing. What was the fucking deal with the John Allison thing?
Okay, John Allison, for those of you who don't know, created a comic book, a comic strip, a web comic. First, it was a web strip called
Scary Go Round.
No, Bobbins, I think.
Oh yeah, it was
first.
Yeah,
this is how long it's been since I've paid any attention to John Allison. I loved Bobbins, and then I read Scary Ground for a while, and yes, he did do Scary Ground, and then yes. I lost track of webcomics entirely. Mm-hmm. So recently, John Allison, who is an old-timey webcomics guy, wrote a blog post, for lack of a better word, about Tumblr, and how in his day, webcomics would have to have enough competency to create a web page, to buy a URL, to upload their webcomic to a site, usually often WordPress running ComicPress plugins, and ultimately convince people to come back to this site every so often to look at their comic book and comic strip, and then be so excited by it to buy printed copies or buy t-shirts or buy posters or whatever. The general webcomic model from really the early 2000s at this point, which is terrifying to say. But So he is an old guard comic strip guy. Like, he is around since Penny Arcade started, or PvP started, or maybe even earlier, honestly, since I think it's Bobbins started. Yeah.
I'm fairly sure it was either when all that stuff started or before.
He's definitely first wave webcomic guy, for sure. Yes.
Back when there were actually, like you just said, there were actual barriers to entry.
Yeah.
You couldn't just be some fucking kid who hit the fucking upload button and then your comic was online.
Minimal barriers, admittedly, but barriers nonetheless. Even in the year 2000. In the year 2000. it was pretty easy to get some hosting, buy an URL, and install WordPress and ComicPress. It wasn't that difficult to get a comic up there in some way. But now that Tumblr is out there, this is more of an indictment on Tumblr than anything, I feel, in his blog post, where people are just throwing shit out there to see what sticks. And that is that is a perfectly good way to do things, because you are in the world we live in now, and I hate myself for agreeing with this mindset a little bit, but the world we live in now, it's so easy to create and throw something up there for people to see that there's no reason not to, at least while you're figuring out what your voice is or what you want to do, to try all sorts of stuff and throw it up there and see what happens. And I think he was upset at people just throwing shit up there and seeing what happens, and people reblogging it or liking it or whatever they do on Tumblr, or stripping out the attribution and posting as their own content, and like all this stuff is stuff he was upset about, and that you couldn't really build an audience in the same way he used to build an audience. And he acknowledged that people use Tumblr to make money now, and there are ways to do that, but it's not the way he did it. And he didn't. We were talking to Matt on Twitter and other people on Twitter about this when it was happening, or when the blog post went up, and we had a discussion back and forth. And some people were saying, "Oh, he's just an old guy who's used to the old way and how it works." And I was more of a yes and no. Like he sees that he goes to a con and people look through his stuff and say, "Hey, that's kind of funny," but not funny enough to spend money on. And he was upset that is sort of the Tumblr economy.
Sorry, go ahead.
So I'm as guilty as anyone else to like. I follow friends on Tumblr that I get a good chuckle or a laugh from some random thing they've retweeted, reblogged, or whatever it is on Tumblr. They've shared from someone else on Tumblr or collected a bunch of animated GIFs with captions, which part of me dies inside every time I see them, and part of me likes, because it's still like, oh, there's that bit from Leverage that I remember that I loved, or Firefly, or old time Doctor Who before the reboot, before it relaunched, like Doctor Who number 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I'm like, this isn't really anything. And the people that I and we're friends with, I don't feel are doing this to become famous or anything. I think they're just trying to share stuff that makes them laugh to friends that will maybe also make them laugh. So that's okay. But I think John Allison was upset with people that are trying to become the next big Tumblr or curator of content without A, attributing things properly, and B, creating anything of their own. Like, it's upsetting when people will go, when people will come to your table at a Comic-Con. Like, he was just at some Comic-Con, I think it was, I don't know what it was offhand, but in his blog post it was some Comic-Con, and it might have been somewhere in England, because he's British, from what I remember.
Yeah.
And people will walk up to his table and go, hey, that's cute, and then move on, as opposed to, and he was fine with that. Like, people aren't going to obviously buy your stuff every time. It's not going to happen. People are going to look and see, oh, that's funny, but move on. And he was upset that that seems to be all people want anymore, is just a quick chuckle and to move on. They don't want to. For me, when I read this article and met Nixon on Twitter, my disagree, and I don't know if you'll disagree, but for me, this is what it was, is that he was upset that people were more interested in getting a quick diversion of a chuckle or a laugh that someone reblogged on Twitter than seeing something newly created that you can connect to and appreciate on a deeper level. And yes, on a surface level, the John Allison blog post was, "Rarg, I'm an old man and Tumblr's the new way and I hate it." And but he was also saying that Tumblr works for some people. But for me, and I can't argue with this, it makes me sad that people have such short attention spans and such and are so crushed by their day-to-day work life and whatnot that when they come home or when they fire up the internet, all they want is something quick and easy to make them laugh, as opposed to something that may resonate more deeply than a surface chuckle, which Tumblr is pretty much good for a surface chuckle, and it's great for that. But it's not, it's rarely going to give you something that will resonate deeply within you that makes you want to come back for more regularly, at least in my experience. And maybe my Tumblr feed is incorrect. And like Twitter, you can, it is what you make it. But in my experience with Tumblr, it's not, it is more about instant gratification than something that will make you feel something or make you think or make you want to impact you in such a way that you're inspired even. Like, it's all about surface, quick hits. And that, and like John Allison, I hate that seems to be where society is going these days, and it's all about quick surface enjoyment and less about, I don't even know less about, maybe we've never been this way, but either way, it makes me sad that we're not about finding something that moves you or inspires you or otherwise makes you think about things in a different way than you did before you read or saw or listened to that new content that someone created. And lots of my complaints in part one and the aborted part two were about how people don't care about that anymore. It's not about inspiring or moving someone. It's all about, I have this joke I have to share, and I have this thing I thought was cute, or I have this thing that will make me famous because it's similar to this other thing that made someone else famous. And I realize saying this that that's not fair, because who, like, people are entitled to express themselves in whatever the way they want, whether it's short or long form, whether it's inspiring or not. If someone, the way things are now is people want quick hits and quick thoughts, and that makes me sad.
Okay, well,
I said a few things that are contradictory and all over the place in there, but that's anyway, go on.
No, that's what we're here for. Yeah. We're here to work this shit out. Okay, so I want you to jump in if I'm wrong here. I'm going to say a couple of things. If this seems all fucking off the reservation, fucking tell me. What we're talking about is, so if you think of the world as it used to be an actual economy where if you like something, you paid for it. You like, you know, basically the idea that we're still kind of fucking grappling with right now, because when you often hear about people talking about comic books, like we were just talking about fucking Hawkeye, where I was like, hey, Hawkeye's awesome. And you were like, yeah, Hawkeye is awesome. Like, fucking, this is cool. Hawkeye fucking doesn't sell very well. At least not compared to, like, I thought that it was a bigger book than it was. I don't know if you did, but I certainly did.
I'm more dialed into the comic book situation, so I knew that it's not selling horribly, but is a low-tier Marvel book.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of sales, not in terms of creativity, in terms of sales.
Yeah, he's still very much a B-list character, yeah. Possibly even, you know, whatever. Anyways, you have this problem where it used to be that if you wanted to watch a TV show or whatever it was, usually the way to support that was fucking watching the actual show, being there, you know, turning on your TV, being a part of the Nielsen rating system really helped, obviously. Or at the very least, you could say, hey, you would buy things that were in the commercials of that show. You'd be that kind of customer. You'd be that sort of thing. Everything related to you would give money, people would do things. That's generally how it would go. Things are changing now very quickly, because as the digital world is fucking changing, as younger generations are starting to create things, and now we have an attention economy. And then the attention economy, I feel, is segmented into two parts. You have what John Allison is raging against, where the attention economy is about celebrity and quick things like, hey, you want to know what Emma Stone said about her brother at that fucking awards show, so you're going to go on Tumblr and you're going to see that fucking gif and you're going to be like, oh, it's fucking funny, whatever, is that thing. Even you go to like a site like Imgur or like whatever, you go to any site that fucking basically gives you pictures to look at, whether it's the Chive or Reddit or whatever you do, you're there for a couple seconds. It's a high bounce rate. You're there for a couple of seconds and you want more and more content. You just keep gobbling it down like fucking candy for, you know, with a kid on fucking Halloween night, because it's just like, yeah, I want more, because it's not fulfilling. It's just quick hits. It's that like, haha, it's funny, whatever, that sort of thing. But what the problem there is that people, you'll never convert to any other fucking realm of reality. Like, eventually, a site like the Chive can, because they can create sort of a personality around the site. But that's what you have to do, is you actually have to have a personality. Something like Hannah Hart on Twitter is a good example of this, with My Drunk Kitchen. She makes a funny video with her webcam. It's not really professionally edited. It's not really professionally done anything. It's just fucking her dicking around, basically. People love her, and they want to get to know her, and so she gets to share more of herself and more of, like, I guess you could say, her art, or at least whatever she's doing. I would say
it's her art. Drinking and attempting to cook things. But she is doing it with intention.
She is. She's doing it not necessarily just to get attention, but also it's comedy. It's something. It's something. Yeah. You know, so she can eventually, through over time, she can convert people to, I think, what John Allison is looking for, and certainly what he had before, which is there's we don't identify him with fucking Bobbins or Scary Go Round or whatever. Like, we identify him as him. He's the guy who's doing that. Same thing, like, when people say PvP, they don't say PvP, they say Scott Kurtz generally. It tends to be Scott Kurtz, the fucking guy. I know you don't like him, but fucking whatever.
No, I can't argue with, I get, like, there's no questioning his success. There's no questioning he is clearly in the upper echelon of webcomics. I don't like them at all, and he's despicable, but there's no arguing his place in webcomics culture.
Yeah, yeah, so that's a fucking thing. So, but eventually, like, this, for the same thing is that he is able to do, okay, so I have my Scott Kurtz story. I don't think he's despicable. I don't know why. I'll ask you why in a second. You think he's despicable, but I don't think he's despicable. I saw him at fucking New York Comic Con. And I sort of was that guy where I was like, hey, I really fucking like what you do. I don't have any cash on me because I'm fucking broke. But if I can get back tomorrow, I'd really like to, like, I, you know, hopefully I can fucking, you know, buy something of yours, whatever. I felt awkward.
Yeah.
I stopped to basically say, like, hey, I like your stuff. But then I sort of realized, like, it doesn't fucking matter if I like his stuff because that's not why he's there. He's not there to get praise. He's there to sell merch. That's what he's there for. And that's what I'm saying is the other, eventually that I think that's what is the really frustrating part for a guy like John Allison or me or anybody else is that it's really hard to get people to convert to a parasocial relationship of where they want to see more of what John Allison is doing or what Scott Kurtz is doing or what fucking Joey's doing or what Ryan's doing or whatever. Even on Twitter, it's really hard to actually develop a real relationship with someone and be like, hey, I'm interested in you. Tell me more about your day. Tell me more about whatever. Because generally people are like, that's fuck you and whatever. Like, how many times have you gotten a fucking someone tweeting at you and being like, hey, you know, I would tell me more about you or whatever, or oh, that's funny, you know, and it's just like, yeah, whatever, asshole, I'm not replying to that because I don't know who the fuck you are. Like, I don't care.
Most of my random tweets are about the Gobo restaurant either in New York or I think it's in Indonesia.
See, there you go.
But there are two Gobo restaurants that I get Instagrams and tweets about regularly.
See, yeah, exactly. It's just people don't even care. They just want to say something. It's more about them saying something than it is about you hearing it. And you know that eventually once you hit a certain age and maturity level. You're just like, fuck it, whatever. Hey, thumbs up. Thanks for fucking following whatever I do, but I'm not whatever. I don't care. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just neutral. It's just what happens. Developing an actual relationship with that person is very hard. And then actually taking it to a business level and converting what you have in the attention economy to actual fucking money, for John Allison to have to sell a t-shirt or for Scott Kurtz to sell a book or whatever it is to at least justify monetarily them being there at that convention, that's really fucking hard. And it used to be a lot easier because you could demand, you did a lot better in the attention economy because you were the only fucking guys out there making webcomics. If you went to a comic convention and it's like, hey, you know, here's my fucking banner, here's my fucking thing, I'm a part of this, like, fucking Jeff Rowland with the whole overcompensating,
Jesus,
that whole thing. That was fucking huge. Everybody
I totally forgot about him and Wigu.
Exactly. Nobody fucking reads that comic anymore, as far as I know. Nobody reblogs it. Nobody tweets it. I haven't seen any. I fucking Facebook. I have people who fucking repost the same pictures of that stupid grumpy fucking cat thing 600 fucking times, and no one has fucking actually tweeted or shared or anything from fucking any of that Wigu overcompensating any of that
to
stuff.
To be fair, Jeff Rowland, when he did create Topedo Co., did it early enough that he probably did okay at the time. And he might have got to a point early enough where he's okay. But I don't know anymore. Because I'm not dialed into the webcomic scene anymore. So I don't know.
Yeah, me either. I don't know. I think because it's changed.
Yeah, exactly. A brief background. We both met each other on a Penny Arcade Splinter forum. Like, yeah. We met through webcomics, ultimately.
Yeah.
And yeah, I am no longer at all dialed in.
Neither am I. Yeah. I read stuff occasionally because I want to, but I don't feel like anyone. I think a while ago it was definitely something that to be a part of the internet, you had to read and see certain things, and those things have fucking changed drastically.
Yeah.
I don't really know, like, the fact that people now are like, why are you not on Pinterest, or why do you not really know or care what Pinterest does? I'm aware of Pinterest from the business side of it, but I ultimately don't care about what they do from the
Man,
actual
fuck
user
Pinterest.
Side.
Pinterest. Come on, Pinterest.
But that's what I'm saying.
Pinterest is the all the complaints I have about Tumblr taken to the extreme. Like, it's literally, there's no commentary, there's nothing, it's just, this is this picture or whatever I saw, that's it. There's nothing else whatsoever. It's just taking Tumblr and pushing it farther away from anyone with an attention span or intention whatsoever.
But it's the easiest way to get attention.
Of course.
Share what you like from other content sources, basically, like I said, like a remix. You're taking all these things and you're making a collage and showing it to people, and people are like, wow, that's great.
And that's great. And, like, Michelle used it. Her friend had a kid a year and a half ago or so now.
Yeah.
And she used Pinterest to find stuff to put together a Pinterest board to decorate her friend's new kid's nursery. And that was a perfectly good reason to use for Pinterest. That makes sense. I'm sure that's the initial impetus behind Pinterest, was to create collections of things that work together to look at and figure out and use. Whereas now, it's just fucking share. Ugh. Sorry.
It's okay. No,
I am now 32. I'm not that old. I know that. But I'm feeling old in that I'm feeling more and more every day the disconnect. But I used to not feel a disconnect between me and the youth. And the last year or so, I felt much more of a disconnect between me and the youth. And like, oh, back in my day, we cared about content, or we wanted to have something that's... I mean, and none of this is really true. 10 years ago, I wanted something to make me laugh, and I wanted something quick and easy that would entertain me. But because it was slightly more difficult to put that on the internet, there was more thought behind the thing that made me laugh or was entertained. Whereas now I just fucking hit a retweet button, or hit a reblog button, or hit a pin this button, and that's all that has to be done, and you have, in your mind, made a statement. When in reality, you have not. You just clicked a fucking button. And that drives me crazy constantly now, but this is a conversation for another time, I feel like.
Yeah. Well, but I get where you're coming from, because, again, when you and I, up until until the invention of Facebook, really, when it came down to even something like with John Allison, I bought John Allison's fucking books. I have one of his fucking books on my bookshelf. Like, the reason I bought that was because I wanted him to keep making comics. It was expensive for him to host things. It was something that he had to actually learn to do. He was a one-guy operation. So it's like, hey, I want to give this guy money, because generally that's what you do. If you want to read something, you buy books. You don't read things on a fucking computer screen. You fucking buy it in book form or comic book form or whatever it is. That's what we did. That has completely changed since fucking 2004, 2005.
And ultimately, I'm glad it changed.
I'm glad too, but at the same time, I'm glad as a consumer, but as a creator, I'm fucking pissed off about it, because it means that people expect that if you write a book, it's an ebook. If you write a book, or if you make a comic, it's a webcomic. If you actually make things and then charge money for them, they go, fuck you. It's so much harder to convert people from an intention economy to an actual economy. There's fucking acronyms. There's fucking shit written about this, because it's so fucking hard to say to somebody, hey, I'm glad you like what I do, but I can't keep doing it unless you give me money. It's so much easier to put a donate button on your website than it is to actually create something physically, and then expect people to buy it. That's why fucking Kickstarter exists. The whole reason Kickstarter exists is because it's extremely hard to move relationships in digital space to meet space. It is extremely hard to come up with an idea and then say, I made this. This is great. Fucking, I need Cheerios. You know, I need milk money. You know, I need whatever. Give me something so that I can survive. I need some sort of sustenance. It's extremely hard to convert that, because it's no longer just making it. It was hard before, but it's so much harder now, because it's the exact opposite problem of where you're not convincing one person to love you. You're convincing thousands upon thousands of people to love you. And if for some reason you say you make a bad joke or you do something wrong, this is the point I was making earlier with the Google Glass thing. It's not about the one person that's wearing Google glasses. It's about the fact that there's other people having a relationship, having a real meet space connection with that person. Even if you're just sitting on the bus next to that person, if you fart in public, there's going to be someone watching you with a camera in their fucking glasses recording that, and then Google Plus is going to tag your face in it when they put it up on YouTube, and they're going to go, for the rest of your life, there's a video of you farting on YouTube on a bus somewhere when you were 22 years old. That's going to go with you and follow you, and it's going to be in your Google results. It's going to be a thing. Like, I know that that's taking that to the extreme, and it probably isn't going to happen, and privacy is going to come back and make a huge resurgence, and I'm sure I'm wrong and whatever else. But at the same time, there are people now who go on Twitter and go, I ate at this fucking restaurant and they were really rude to me and so on and so forth. And I got to express myself on Twitter. Don't ever fucking go to this restaurant. Blah, blah, blah. Because they're using the attention economy. They're using their popularity and their supposed pseudo celebrity or whatever they have.
Speaking of the attention economy, there was this thing that came out a little while ago. There was a card you could buy from someone that said, it was essentially saying, I'm a Yelper or I'm a Chow Hounder or something. It was a card that they sold under the auspices of, you would put it down on the table at a restaurant, and it would be clear that you are going to review the service of this and post it on Yelp or Chow Hound or whatever. And there was an outcry of this from both food writers and any sensible person that this is fucking bullshit. Like, you can't say, I'm going to write a Yelp. It's fucking blackmail is what it is. It's like, I'm going to write a Yelp review that says your restaurant sucks unless you treat me like a fucking king, is what that card was saying.
Yeah.
And it drove me crazy that this thing exists. And yes, I'm an old man, and yes, I understand that Yelp is a thing that seriously can impact a restaurant. Like, it can literally make or break a restaurant, is Yelp reviews. It's not huge in Canada, but in the States, from what I gather, there is enough content there that it can really seriously affect the bottom of the restaurant. And the fact that you can buy this reviewer card or whatever it was, I honestly can't remember what it is right now, and I'm sorry, this popped into my head. But it is the purest example I've seen thus far of the attention economy, and that, like, here's this card showing that I am going to write shit about you on the internet, which I wish didn't matter, because most people's opinions, including my own, lots of the time, aren't well thought out, and I get frustrated and will say things in the heat of the moment without thinking about what's going on around the circumstances, like whether it was a Tuesday versus a Saturday, whether they're busy or not, whether I ordered a complicated dish that might take a little longer to cook or not. Like, all these things that could happen that could affect my enjoyment, or they just had a bad day.
But yeah, like, you don't have the context.
A real reviewer would go multiple times to a restaurant and see how they are over multiple instances versus a random one shot to see how they are.
Yep, but even...
And this card shows that, like, this is... We are living in an economy where attention and the loudest person is all that matters, and it drives me crazy!
But at the same time, okay,
This is different from creativity, I get that, but you talked about attention economy, and I had to bring this up.
No, I'm with you. I think this is, again, a part of all of this stuff, is that generally that tends to be the loudest person wins. That tends to be always the case with all of these things. That's the common thread. That's what frustrated me enough to take my fucking frustrations out on the 19-year-old kid who's posting really bad webcomics or whatever it was that we were raging against in the last podcast. I'm really frustrated by all of this because I'm not loud. I don't want to be loud. I never want to be loud. What I want to do is I want to put my head down. I want to work really hard. And I want to produce shit that's good. That's good. That's great. That's better than other people are doing. And if people like it, good, wonderful. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I have to be able, if I want to do that, which I do, I know I have a choice, and I don't want to say I don't have a choice because that makes it sound so much more dire and horrible than it really is. I totally do have a choice. I have lots of choices. I'm a totally capable and competent guy. There's lots of things I can do. I have chosen to do something that's really fucking hard, and it's really hard for anybody, even popular people. I don't mind making podcasts. I don't mind making videos. I don't mind doing all sorts of things. But the reason I tend to do those things is not because I want attention. It's because there's some sort of other incentive. Talking to you, for example, making a note for the future. When I put stuff up on Tumblr now, the reason I do it is because I'm making a note to look back on the future. Basically, my Tumblr has become a dev blog for my life, of where I do stupid things and then I talk about them on Tumblr. I say stuff and it's a reminder to do it. To hey, I want to email Greg or talk to Ryan about doing the podcast again or whatever, things like that. That's not art. It's not whatever. It's just mostly just a really fancy to-do list. But at the same time, all of those things you have to look at the incentives behind them. If you don't look at the incentives behind why things happen and why things are done, if someone's putting stuff up on the internet and they're saying, this is art, I'm making this webcomic, or I'm doing this thing, or I'm writing this funny story, or whatever I'm doing, if they're doing that to express themselves, if they're doing that because they want to boost their own self-esteem by way of creativity, because that's fucking what humans do, that's understandable. And I really wish that there was a bigger demarcation between the people who are doing it because they want to create things and tinker and remix and change things around versus the people who actually are doing it for the attention and really want the attention. Because as of right now, you can't fucking tell. Because authenticity has turned into a buzzword in 2013. Yeah. It really has. And for something like when I see someone who is popular, say, I don't know, for writing about comics, and they talk about how they hated a restaurant or something like that, I want to say to them, take a while, go back there, try it again or whatever it is, because you don't realize that you have maybe 3,000 followers or 4,000 followers. That seems like a lot to you, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't, I don't know, but you may have just ruined someone's day.
Or a livelihood, if you're big enough.
Yeah, if you're big enough, or simply if something goes viral, you don't have control of things once they come out of your mouth. You have a magical megaphone that goes to thousands upon thousands of people, and you have no control over things once they're said. You have to be a little more aware of that. You have to be a little more cognizant of what you're doing. Whether you're creating things or just saying shit, you have to be more aware of that. I wish people were more aware of how technology is not dehumanizing us. We are dehumanizing us with technology. We keep saying things like, hey, fuck that waiter because, you know, we didn't get extra fries like we did last time or whatever on Twitter, you know, and we tweet at, you know, fucking Smashburger or whatever it is. Oh, I had a really bad experience. How many times you've had a good experience do you really fucking tweet at the restaurant and say, hey, thank you for that good experience? There are people who do. I'm not saying that there are people who don't. I think that everyone should fucking say, hey, thank you all the time. But do it in person. Do it in context. Mm-hmm. Don't fucking take it to Twitter. Don't do those sorts of whatever. I don't know. I don't fucking have a say over these things. I'm not the fucking king of social media. It seems very weird to me that people don't realize that for even something with Yelp, a restaurant, it's an outlier's problem. People who really love a restaurant are going to write great Yelp reviews, or people who like fucking writing funny Yelp reviews are going to write Yelp reviews.
Well, no, it's the whole thing with like Yelp and Amazon. You have to look for all the reviews that are not 5 or 1.
Yeah.
All the stuff that's 5 or 1 is bullshit. And everything that's in between, you have to sort of read and see, read between the lines and not look at the number. And yes, you could, on aggregate, you can sort of see, look, if it's 4.5 in general and there's hundreds of reviews, it's probably a good place. Because, for two reasons. One, you're more likely to say something on the internet if it's shitty than if it's good. And two, it's an aggregate of all the people who have talked about it. If hundreds of people have said it's good, it's probably decent.
Yeah.
But you still have to take those 5s and 1s with a grain of salt. And you look on Yelp or Chowhound of the super crazy, like, adamantly good or bad reviews, and you just discount them. You look for people that have a middle-of-the-ground review that says, this is pretty good, and we had this, it was good, this was good, and a couple things were not great. And then you have a balanced, thoughtful thing that came out. And the same is true of anything. You have to have a balanced, thoughtful piece of art. And what? Like, it's all the same thing. And we should wrap this up.
Yeah, I know. I guess I just wanted to move back from everything because at the end of the day, I don't know where I stand. I've been putting out a lot of stuff lately that I don't care. Like, I don't, like I said, I put up I post things on Tumblr that I'm sure people read for whatever fucking reason, because I simply want to say to my future self, hey, this is the way you were feeling, you know, 6 months ago. You're doing better. I like posting about my failures on Tumblr because I know that I can look back on that and go, I'm glad I've learned from that. That's good. I wish I had kept up with blogging, if only just to say this is what's going wrong, to see along the lines of how I've actually developed, because it's really hard for me to on bad self-esteem days to put all this stuff together. I'm sure that there's lots of stuff I've put out, even professionally, that is – no, I shouldn't even say that. I know that there's stuff I put out professionally that I'm not proud of, that if someone dredges it up and said, we're judging you by this one metric, by this one thing, defend yourself, I couldn't. I would just say I fucked up. You know, I got paid, you know, $10, you know, to publish something or whatever. You know, it wasn't worth the money. It wasn't worth the time. I was really tired that day and I was really down. And, you know, I just felt like putting something out there. And I did something stupid or whatever. I don't think that any one thing should damn someone. I don't think that any one thing should speak for someone. Every single person. I mean, because it's the same shit of where people are like, oh, it fucking sucks that someone won't employ me because I have, you know, fucking pictures of me doing bong rips on Facebook. Yeah, because they're fucking taking one dimension of you and they're saying that they don't want to hire you because you're fucking, you look like a
That is human nature, though. Like, and you have to be aware of that if you want to get a job. You have to know that human nature is to, like, look at someone, put them in some sort of category, and move forward with their lives.
Yeah.
We are not, historically and probably forever speaking, we are not known as people that will, of nuance or of thoughtfulness. We are known as people who will categorize and make snap judgments. And yes, individually we are by and large not like that, but as large groups, we tend to be like that.
No, by and large we are like, we are that way. Dude, it costs calories to think. People don't want to think because then they will starve to death. It's very fucking simple. It's supposed to be a snap, easy judgment. Fuck that guy.
You're making me sad.
His fucking Republican Superman and his stupid fucking face. Yeah, no, I'm sorry I'm making you sad, but at the same time, as a society and even personally, we're able to overcome the fact that, like hey, I realize that if I'm writing, it costs a lot of calories to do, to sit here and write and do all those things. But at the same time, we live in a calorie abundant fucking society. At least you and I do. It's super easy for me to get a dollar cheeseburger to make up for the fact that I've sat here writing, you know, for a couple hours, or if I code something or whatever and it doesn't turn out like if I write a bad program and I code for 6 hours like I did yesterday, then I can say I can get up and I can eat a slice of pizza that costs $2 and I can feel good about myself and my brain feels good because I like pizza and whatever. That's amazing. That's fantastic that we can do that we move past like the fact that I would write a program and it wouldn't work and I'd get really sad and I'd get really down on myself and say I shouldn't learn things because after that I'd be too tired to go out and hunt wildebeest and starve to death. So it fucking, you know, it's good and it's bad. It's good and it's bad, and things are changing, and I wish that all of this was more about how I could deal, or we, or any of us could deal with our inner frustration about this. I wish that I had a fucking answer for John Allison. I wish that I had a fucking answer for everybody It's not about, you know, fucking quick hits. It's not about the Chive or Reddit or you know, fucking memes or whatever. Because memes fucking are going to exist forever. Memes have existed forever. They will exist forever. It's that funny little thing. Memes are fart jokes. That's what they are. They're fart. Fucking, who the fuck doesn't love fart jokes? Everybody loves fart jokes. I love the Grumpy Cat too. He was really funny the first time I saw him. Now I don't fucking care. If you like him good, that's a fantastic thing. I still like the fucking walrus with the bucket. I've been holding that in my heart for years. So I get it. Like, it's not a big deal. I'm not trying to fucking shit on anyone.
I think the long and the short of it is, we feel like people should exercise their creativity, but people should not have hopes necessarily of fame from it. It should all be about making something you love and enjoy versus making something that you think will become popular or interesting.
Sure. On that note, I think we've had enough depressing fucking news or depressing comments for one podcast, so we should.
Yeah, let's move on. We'll try to be more happy next time.
No, we won't. It'll be equally as depressing next time.
Yeah, I'm in my 30s.
And you're going to love it.
I'm just going to bend over and take it.
That's right, because it's Internet Boyfriends, and that's what we do here. this is Internet Boyfriends, and thank you for listening, and I am Joey, if you want to find me on Twitter. Not that you would after today's fucking conversation, but it's at Joey Heflick on Twitter, and with me, as always, is
Ryan Kloss, at Gobo on Twitter.
So, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Have a good week.